There are people that we encounter that just naturally make us smile. We love being in their presence. We love being able to interact with them, and just the thought of them can bring a smile to our face. And then there are those other people. The ones that turn it all upside down. Take the smile and kind of turn it around. Them we don't like to spend so much time with. Them we don't like to have conversations with. Them we don't even want to see or think about. But they're there. I think that could be what would safely be said about the relationship between Mary Johnson and O'Shea Israel. Next door neighbors. Now, they get along great. Before, not so much. In fact, it could be said that Mary Johnson hated O'Shea Israel. Now, not just a word to be used lightly. A hate that comes from the very core of her soul. A hate that burns within her. A hate that would drag her down to a place that she wouldn't want to be. But it was a hate that she believed was justified. And it was a hatred that you might think was justified too. In February of 1983, O'Shea Israel was at a party in a house in Minneapolis. A scuffle broke out. A man was pushed to the ground. O'Shea pulled out a gun and shot the man in the head. Actually, not a man, but like him, a 16-year-old boy. Mary Johnson's only son. She sat in that courtroom day after day, waiting for justice, waiting for O'Shea Israel to be caged up like the wild animal he deserved to be. And he was. 25 to 35 years. And that hate consumed Mary. It became an ever-present part of her life. It shaped the way she thought. It shaped the actions of her life. Began to drag her down. And it wasn't the fact that her son was no longer with her. It was more of the fact that that hatred became all-consuming. Mary Johnson's a woman of faith. A woman of a deep, profound faith. And as she began to continue her life within that faith, as she studied the things that were placed before her, as she faced the words of Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, she began to question her hatred. How could she be one of the merciful if she lived with this sense of hatred, this sense of anger, this sense of seeking revenge? It was one of those things that really got in the way, because there was something about that hatred that Mary had for O'Shea that she reveled in. Because after all, this young man deserved everything he was getting. He destroyed her life. He he went in a very arbitrary and capricious way and destroyed her life by taking away her only son. O'Shea could rot right where he was. And then Jesus says, blessed are the merciful, for they shall receive mercy. In 1995, as this struggle for Mary continued, she put together an organization called From Death to Life. A support organization that was really formed for women who had lost children through violence. To be able to help them cope, to be able to help them get back on their feet again, to be able to give them a support structure that she was lacking for all those years. It is a good and a noble cause. But how do you find life? From death, there's still hatred. Because there's nothing about hatred that is life-giving. There's nothing about hatred that is life-sustaining. And so in 1995, Mary Johnson went to visit O'Shea Israel in prison in Stillwater, Minnesota. And as she sat across from the man who as a boy had taken away her boy, she began to sob. And inexplicably, O'Shea Israel rose from his seat on the other side of the table. And he walked around the table. And he held Mary Johnson as she wept, still mourning the loss of her son. It was there. As Mary Johnson sought to seek a way to forgive, sought to learn to be merciful, that she received mercy in a way she never expected. Through the comfort of the man who murdered her son. Three years after that, through Mary Johnson's efforts, O'Shea was paroled. They rented the house next door to Mary. And now they work together with this organization, From Death to Life, hoping to be able to bind people together in circumstances that seem so impossible. To bring healing into a world that seems so caught up in violence and anger and hatred. To restore a sense of love where it doesn't seem love could ever exist. Most of all, to serve as examples of the merciful, of those who choose to heal, those who choose to forgive, those who choose to live their lives with the purest of intentions. When Jesus sat or stood on that mount, he offered these words of teaching, these words of advice to those who followed him, to those who were willing to listen in terms of what life really should be about. like the Beatitudes because they make us smile. There's a sense of life and living found there. There's this sense of such perfection in what Jesus offers to the world. And yet, those aren't given to us to make us smile. Beatitudes sit before us to make us grimace and cringe. Because when you look at the Beatitudes, how many of those do you live? How is your life shaped around being pure in heart, merciful, peacemaking? But they're there as instruction. They're given to us as teaching. They're placed before us to help us understand that this is how God intends us to live. In the worst of circumstances, it took Mary Johnson 12 years to get to the point that she could exhibit mercy in a merciless situation. And yet she only discovered that because of the mercy that was first shared with her from the individual who had no right to share any sense of kindness with her. Beatitudes set before us as a challenge. As a challenge for us to live our lives in a better way, in a purer way, in a more merciful way, in a more peaceful way. To live our lives in the way that God intended for us. To be the people that God has called us to be. People embodied with that love. People embodied with that sense of mercy. People who shape their lives with a pureness within their heart. To be able to do the things in this world that the world says are impossible. To forgive those people who don't deserve to be forgiven. To love those people who seem so unlovable. To show mercy to the people who deserve no mercy. To allow our lives to be as pure as possible. That God's love exudes from what we say and what we do. When that happens, then we shall know God. When we live our lives in the manner for which Jesus placed before us in those Beatitudes, then we shall know love. Isn't easy. But it is the challenge that Christ has placed before us each and every day of our lives. To be able to share those things. To be able to live our lives in love and in kindness and in mercy. And when we do, it is then, at that moment, that we truly are loving the Lord our God through what we say and through what we do. Living out the impossible, but understanding through examples like Mary Johnson and O'Shea Israel that it is not impossible, but truly within the realm of possibility. Our anger, our distrust, and our hatred, those only serve as excuses to be able to ignore or sidestep the challenges that God places before us. It is that love that God has blessed us with. It is that love that God insists we share. Amen.